This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Okay, welcome to the program. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Jeff Merrick Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. Coming up on the show today, Elliot, who normally kicks things off here, will be pushed to hour two. Elliot is in Florida for the general manager's meetings. And we'll get the full time and temp and rundown from Elliot here. A couple of things on the docket, most notably the DOPS, Department of Player Safety, and what happens here after the George Perros presentation, and how do general managers feel about how things have been handled so far this season. A couple of things we talked about on the podcast earlier this morning, outside of the DOPS presentation, things like, you know, visors, video review, these types of things we believe are on the docket for today. So we'll get into that with Elliot in hour two. Also in hour two, someone who's on the executive committee, who's in Florida, is Doug Armstrong, busy guy, general manager of the St. Louis Blues, GM for the Canadian national team, for the Olympics, and for the, how are they calling this one? The Four Nations face-off, that's it. It just rolls off the tongue, folks. So we'll talk to Doug Armstrong coming up in hour two. Should probably park some time to talk to Doug about the St. Louis Blues. All of a sudden, they've won four games in a row and they're 4 points out. Can they do this? Maybe it is lucky they didn't trade Pavel Buchnevich after all. Doubling up the Ducks yesterday, 4-2. Robert Thomas with a pair of goals. Buchnevich with three assists. By the way, the Ducks eliminated officially yesterday. They joined the Chicago Blackhawks and San Jose Sharks to, nobody's surprised. Right now, the East is kind of a mess, eh? Kind of like a beautiful, glorious, gorgeous mess, as no team seems to want to really jump up and grab that final wild card spot. Tampa, with the first wild card, have kind of grabbed it, ran, hid, and no one's going to find them right now. That's how they're playing. And by the way, the visuals of Mikhail Sergachev skating are glorious. Good news there, fingers crossed. Just great to see him back on the ice. So whether it is the Islanders, oof. How'd you like to be the Islanders right now? How'd you like to go to Patrick Waugh and say, sorry about that effort, again, when your coach is one of the most competitive people to ever play the game of hockey in the NHL or elsewhere in any generation? It's kind of tough to go to Patrick Waugh and say, sorry about my effort tonight, coach. Well, the Detroit Red Wings, who had the bunny hop weekend, one big win and one big loss, they end up in the same spot. Washington Capitals, who may end up in the playoffs, either third in the Metro or in a wild card position. And it's wild to even mention right now, considering how we just saw Brian McClellan a couple weeks ago wave the white flag and throw in the towel on the season. Here they are, maybe the one team that looks like they want a wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. And a big game coming up against the Calgary Flames. We'll talk about that coming up in a couple of moments. The Buffalo Sabres still kind of in this one as well. The Pittsburgh Penguins kind of in this one as well. And if you squint really hard, maybe you'll see the New Jersey Devils. But again, Tampa running away with that first wild card. Second wild card. Who wants it? Who knows? It's up for grabs. Take your pick. Scott Laughlin, by the way, on SiriusXM this morning on NHL Network Radio, making the point that as we sit right now, when you look at the President's Trophy race, there are eight teams that could conceivably be tops in the NHL after 82 games. Eight of them. When's the last time we saw that many at this time of year lay claim to maybe being the top team in the regular season? We have Boston at 95, the Rangers and the Florida Panthers at 94, Vancouver Canucks at 92, they're hanging in, the Winnipeg Jets, Colorado Avalanche, and Dallas Stars all tied at 91. Yes, all top three teams in the Central are tied with 91 points. And the Carolina Hurricanes, who have won five of their last six, most recently Saturday against the Toronto Maple Leafs, in spectacular fashion, I might add, are at 90. Eight teams separated by 5 points for tops in the NHL. Bottom of this hour, Claude Julien, former NHL coach, stops by to share his thoughts on what he sees in the NHL right now, specifically and obviously from a coaching point of view. In the meantime, always glad to welcome Shannon Goldman from The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast back to the program to go over a busy weekend, Shana, not just in the NHL, but also in the PWHL, both in Pittsburgh and in Detroit. We're going to bracket that conversation in a second. But before we get there, your thoughts on the weekend that was around the NHL, specifically around those teams that I want to say are fighting for the final wild card spot, although it seems as if the Washington Capitals, checks notes to make sure that's right, Washington Capitals seem to be the only team that kind of really wants this thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it feels like everyone's playing hot potato with that playoff spot. And you would think everybody would be vying for it, and yet it's going to be a lucky loser to get in unless the Capitals actually win and make their way because they're the one team trying. But when you watch games this weekend, right, and you watch this playoff race, first of all, I think it's so exciting we're still talking about the playoff race because before the deadline, there was kind of that big question, would things still be so competitive post-deadline? Who's going to be a seller? Who's going to be a buyer? And if all these teams sell, are they going to take themselves out of the race and it's going to all just come into shape really quickly? And that hasn't happened. But if anybody says they want expansion of the playoffs, needs to look at this weekend and see how important games are still, you know, how important they still are during the stretch, how important they're going to be moving forward. If there was an expanded playoff race, this wouldn't matter. Everybody could, you know, sit on their heels, make it, and figure it out once they get into the postseason. We are talking about meaningful games on March 18th, and I think we still will be the next 10, 20 days. Isn't that what we're all looking for?
We are, and I do want to ask you about the St. Louis Blues here in a couple of moments with the Western Conference, but sticking with the East here, let me ask you about one team specifically, as we say in the Atlantic, and that is the New York Islanders. And what a week it was for the New York Islanders. You know, I would hate to be one of those players and have to look Patrick Waugh in the eyes, one of the most intense players the game has ever seen, who competed hard every game, really. But then when it really counted, Patrick Waugh was the guy. You know, we always have those conversations. If you had to win one game, which goaltender would you want? Normally I pick Hasek, but you can make a strong case as well for Patrick Waugh. How would you like to be anyone on that Islanders team coming off the ice after either the loss against the Los Angeles Kings or the Buffalo Sabres or the Ottawa Senators or yesterday the hated New York Rangers and look Patrick Waugh in the eye and say, sorry about the effort, coach, but there it is. Like, Shana, a couple of minutes ago, we were talking about how the Islanders have distinguished themselves and they're tucked away. And sure, their standings look kind of goofy to anyone who has a casual look at it. 29, 23, and 15. All of a sudden, and their next game is against the powerful and mighty Carolina Hurricanes, who look great with Gensel and Kuznetsov right now. How do those players look at Patrick Waugh and say, yeah, I made a contribution after losing four in spectacular fashion, the likes of which they did last week?
Yeah, you look at that Kings game and everything kind of has turned since then. I think that was the one excusable loss, right? Yeah. Long road trip out west. It was a boring game, sure.
Sure.
It's the games after that. The Sabres, the way they lost, they looked completely flat-footed. And, you know, you give the Sabres a lot of credit. You see a lot of plays with like Dahlin and Byram, the way they're breaking the puck out, the way they haven't all year, you know, it's sparking these offensive sequences. That's great and wonderful. But the Islanders have been so stout defensively. It started when Patrick Waugh took over, and I think really the Stadium Series game, and he mentioned it, that was the time they really had enough time to try to work in new systems. It's so hard to do midseason. And you saw their game turn around. From the time he took over to the game against the Kings, this was one of the best teams in expected goals against at 5-on-5 in the entire league. And you see it's because of the way that they're, you know, closing off the rush game against. It really fell apart these last couple games. Against the Sabres, it's not excusable. Against the Senators, it's absolutely not. And those are important points to have. And then against the Rangers, it's even, you know, a tougher loss to swallow. And yes, it's, you know, a back-to-back, but it was a back-to-back for both teams. So I would have a very tough time looking at Patrick Waugh if I was a player right now. But, you know, the bright side is other teams around them don't want that playoff spot either. But it did feel like they finally put themselves in this position. Their odds went up to, what, 70%? And now it's starting to slip away again. So you have to find a way to like recenter yourself and get back to what you were doing just a week ago.
Can you figure out who the Detroit Red Wings are? Like, this is a team that didn't make any moves at deadline. I threw in my notes this week that, you know, there were a lot of teams that were looking for a lot of the Red Wings prospects, a lot of them in Grand Rapids, and Steve Yzerman was about 0% interested in letting any of them go. So outside of moving Klim Kostin, Detroit remained silent at trade deadline. And it's an interesting weekend. They beat the Buffalo Sabres 4-1. They turn around and get doubled up by the Pittsburgh Penguins 6-3. So just when you thought that, okay, the losing streak is over, they start to turn it around. I get that it's, you know, a couple of games right next to each other, but still, another one of those teams that are keeping things spicy for the wrong reasons, Shana Goldman?
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the Red Wings, and really you can look at them starting in January, and you look at their 5-on-5 play and start seeing some concerning trends, but they were winning games. And this is the toughest part, right? If you're an NHL team and you're winning games, do you keep doing what's making you successful, or do you try to adjust along the way, or, you know, risk shaking the boat? And for me, I always say you have to look below the surface because you want to extend your winning streak. You don't want to get complacent. And we saw negative trends emerge over the last 2 months at 5-on-5. We saw their offensive creation sink despite their finishing rise. We saw their defensive numbers completely tank despite the goaltending keeping things even, and then it started to come to a head. And even though their offensive creation started to tick back up a little bit more recently, you know, over the last like 10 games or so, it isn't enough. You know, if you want to sustain your success of your hot goaltending, and Alex Lyon was really strong, and your really great shooting luck, you know, you have to make adjustments below the surface. I think all of their issues stem from their defense. And, you know, we know the blue line is flawed, but it starts with the forward group too. It's a little bit of everything, and I'm a little surprised at how many defensive flaws they still have, because you think of Derek Lalonde and the defensive systems he helped instill in Tampa Bay. You know, there's a little bit of a disconnect. The other issue is obviously the Larkin injury, but if one player is going to make your team come apart at the seams, it kind of shows that you're not ready, and you shouldn't have been a buyer. I know it's easy to say, well, if Yzerman bought at the deadline, I think standing pat, which is essentially what he did, is a step forward from selling. And if you look at this team, there's good reason not to buy in just yet, because it just feels like they're not there.
The interesting thing about that is, I mean, listen, we all know they do a lot of their buying in the offseason. Last two summers have been a steady and sort of revolving door of players, like veteran players coming in. I would suspect that might even continue into this summer. It does follow a Red Wings model. Although I say this in lowercase, not uppercase, of over-ripening players in Grand Rapids and waiting until they're really ready. I know that was always a stereotype with Ken Holland, but then you look at the Red Wings roster and you say, well, how is Valtteri Filppula and Juri Hudler going to break into this lineup? I know it's convenient to say, oh, you know, we like to over-ripen them. And it's like, well, you had no choice. When you look at like what is Datsyuk and Zetterberg and Franzen and Holmstrom, et cetera, who's getting into this lineup? But I digress. But it does seem to follow that Detroit Red Wings stereotype of, we're not bringing anyone in here until they're 100% ready. So we're going to fill this team with rosters. We're going to block the kids until we're absolutely 100% sure that they're ready. Essentially, it's a long-winded way, Shane, of me setting up that they do a lot of buying in the offseason. Steve Yzerman is happy to go shopping in the offseason. And when you're this close to a playoff spot at deadline. Now, last year's deadline, remember they lost those two games against the Ottawa Senators, and Yzerman said, it's not there. We're selling. Tyler Bertuzzi, you're going to the Boston Bruins. But they were right there, Shayna. Like, they were right there, and they do shop, and Dylan Larkin's going to come back eventually. Did not part of you think to yourself, Yzerman needs to do something? You know, you have the whole marketplace saying, finally, we can see a playoff game in this kind of new building, with this building that hasn't seen NHL playoff games. Did not part of you kind of at least feign surprise that Yzerman didn't do a thing?
No, I mean, I was kind of hoping that they'd spice it up. They could be the surprise team, right? Because you look around the league of contenders, and how many contenders can truly spend? Do they have assets? Do they have draft capital at this point? Do they have cap space? And, you know, only a handful do. So you were hoping a team like the Red Wings would come in and make this splash. But to me, it didn't make sense to go after a rental. And we didn't see enough players move who weren't rentals, aside from, you know, the Casey Mittelstadt trade, right? We and the Bowen Byram deal. Like, we really just didn't see enough of that. So it felt like trades that the Red Wings should stay away from. And the other part of it, too, is you say, well, what can they possibly add at this point? Well, maybe they should add a defenseman so Jeff Petrie doesn't have to play as much. But you have Justin Hall still sitting there as a healthy scratch, someone they brought in the offseason. Yeah. So you come to this point and you say, well, what's the move then? the other part of it too is you look at teams that do work in the off season and they tend to get more back for their players. Like prices always raise at the deadline. So sometimes it really isn't in a team's best interest to do their business then. It's not the smartest strategy, especially for someone that's playing the long game like the Red Wings. So maybe they have something up their sleeve to do in the offseason to really make a splash, but you have to question if they should be buyers just yet. It just feels like they aren't ready comparatively to other teams that were making their business. And especially if you're going to be that wild card too, do you have any shot against a team like the Florida Panthers realistically? And I think we saw a couple weeks ago that they don't at all just yet. And we'll be back after a quick break with Jeff.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I'm going to have to scrub that liner. This is the Shayna Goldman Show, as we'll see a two-minute spike in ratings there, I'm sure, Shayna Goldman. Thanks for pinch-hitting as my tie line box went down, albeit briefly. But much to the listeners' and viewers' chagrin, I am back on a split screen with you and split audio as well. Where were you speaking? What were you speaking of when I vanished on you?
Yeah, you know, we were just talking about, like, quickly taking over the ship and how this is my show now. It's not the bestie slot. It's my slot. No. You know, we were just finishing
right.
About
I'm your
Red
I'm your bestie in this slot now. Right, yeah, right, right.
This is my ship now. No, it's fine. I get to direct this now. So,
no, I know. I'm just here to answer to you. I'm just here to answer. Let's actually park it about the Red Wings, because I do want to get to a couple of things in the West specifically. And here's what I'm wondering about. And I have no idea how this is going to sort itself out, nor does anybody else, I suspect. I'm sure there are teams you like more than the other, but nonetheless, as the old saying goes, your records, you know, you are what your record says you are. Winnipeg, Colorado, Dallas, all at 91 points. Now, the Jets have played 67 games, Colorado's played 68, and the Dallas Stars have played 69. I know defensively Dallas has had their issues previously, and I think if you're a Dallas Stars fan, you probably have a little bit of concern about Jake Oettinger right now. But of these three, who do you think distinguishes themselves in the Central?
I think it's going to be Colorado. And it's really tough because I think each team had such a great deadline and loaded up in the way that they really needed to. I'm someone who has underrated the Jets before, so I could be wrong, but I feel like every time I buy in on Winnipeg, they go through a stretch. But I have to go Colorado. I feel like we're not talking about their deadline enough, honestly. I think everyone was so shocked that they got rid of Bowen Byram that we're forgetting what they brought in and how they rebalanced this lineup. To me, they are the team to beat, even with some issues in net.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems as if, like, there's a couple of things you get, a couple of different ways or formulas, rather, I suppose, when you look at defending how you can win the Stanley Cup. One, you can have an insanely good defense, like we saw with the Vegas Golden Knights last year, or B, you can have an insanely hot goaltender, not unlike what we saw in 2019 with Jordan Binnington and the St. Louis Blues. Not to take anything away from their blue line, both Vegas and St. Louis both had Alex Pietrangelo, future Hall of Famer, but I digress. It seems as if, though, Colorado, who, let's not forget, you know, enjoyed their greatest success when Patrick Waugh was their netminder, but they were a murderer's row at every single position, they seem fine having okay goaltending. Like, they're fine with it. Like, they have a blue line that can move the puck. They have a blue line that can defend. They have a really nasty bit of business in Josh Manson, who every now and then reminds everybody that his father was the legend Dave Manson. And he's still a really tough hockey player, just like Dad was. And then up front, like, we focus a lot on the goal scoring and the production and Nathan MacKinnon and what a great skate to blade to pass the Arturi Lehkonen play that was against Edmonton on Saturday. And I think we forget just how aggressive they are around the puck, specifically when they don't have it. Like, I was saying this to Elliot on the on the podcast that came out this morning. The one thing about the Colorado Avalanche is, you know, they're on their game when you see them hounding pucks. Like, they are so aggressive at retrievals. Maybe when they're on their game, the most aggressive team on puck retrievals. You want to share a thought or two on the nature of why Colorado is so successful? Again, when they're on their game.
Yeah, you know, they have all the skill in the world, right? You have Makar, you have MacKinnon, you have Rantanen. They are the superstar trio that few teams can measure up to. But it's the supporting cast, and I think that they've done a really good job replenishing it, because to start the season, depth was definitely an issue. I mean, look, that's why guys like Byram weren't doing as well when they weren't playing with MacKinnon. Those third and fourth lines didn't strike the same fear as they did maybe when Colorado won the Cup. But you have so many disruptors in this lineup, which is, you know, one of my favorite styles of play, that there's that, how they hound pucks, how they disrupt opponents with their speed, with their forecheck. And you see it with players like Val Nichushkin. He's one of the best at that. And Arturi Lehkonen, to me, is the definition of a disruptor. And he has a ton of skill and upside, too. He's someone that isn't, he can carry a third line, the two of them, but they can also jump up and support and complement top talent, which is much harder to do. I think everybody thinks, like, oh, if you play with MacKinnon, you'll be fine. But not everybody can keep up and actually complement MacKinnon, which it's a tall ask. Then you see guys like Duhame and Trenin, and I think that really solidifies the bottom six to what they need it to be, that it feels like all three lines can just make it so hard to play against you. And it's a different kind of tough to play against than we traditionally think of in the playoffs. But I think what works for Colorado is they know that's their strength, and they're not trying to bring something else in. Oh, we need sandpaper. Oh, we need size. This is our strength, and we're going to lean into it throughout four lines and three D pairs, and we're going to see if that works for us. I think it's a really strong strategy.
Let me ask one more question about the Western Conference, and I'll talk to Doug Armstrong more about this coming up in hour two. GM of the St. Louis Blues, we did not trade Pavel Buchnevich, and now we might get into a wild card spot. I know it's a 4-point gap, and I know you got to chase Vegas, etc., but how are you feeling about St. Louis right now? They've won four games. They're 4 points back. Buchnevich with 3 points last night. Every time you watch St. Louis, Buchnevich is looking fantastic. Robert Thomas, you and I have talked about him plenty, with a pair of goals last night against the Anaheim Ducks. Can St. Louis do this, or is there not enough there for them to do so?
I don't think there's enough there. I am a St. Louis Blues doubter, I'll be honest, but you look at even when they were kind of flying high earlier this season, and they were going on this streak, and they had some of the best goaltending in the league in, what was it, the month of January? You know, it was really impressive what they were doing, but you could just see there wasn't enough substance below the surface. And I think that's going to be the issue here again. There was a stat last night during the game. It was like they have a great record when Kevin Hayes scores. It was like 7-2-1, something like that, right? And I can completely understand why their record would be so positive, because to me, those are the games you hear that they have secondary scoring, which is one of the biggest problems that they have. We know that top-loaded line is going to produce with Buchnevich and Kyrou and Thomas, but you need everybody else to contribute a little bit more. If they can get that secondary scoring, that's step one to balance out their goaltending. I just don't love what I see from them defensively, and I don't know if that's ever going to change. If the Predators didn't go on the run that they did, I think that there'd be an opening for the Blues, but I think that we're down to one spot in the West really at this point is what gives me more hesitation to think that they could sneak in.
I'm with you there. It's down to the one. Nashville has run away with that first wild card spot, kind of like how Tampa's done it in the Eastern Conference. Real quick, last question. We'll focus on the Carolina Hurricanes. An interesting weekend. Big comeback against the Maple Leafs on Saturday in spectacular fashion, and then they just blow the barn doors off of Ottawa on Sunday and take 4 points out of the weekend. Gensel looks great, shocking. Kuznetsov looks like he's found a home with the Carolina Hurricanes, and I don't think the irony of a Penguin and a Capital coming together to help the Carolina Hurricanes win a Stanley Cup is or should be lost on anybody. Your thoughts on what we're seeing from Carolina right now, Shannon Goldman? They look hot.
They do. And you know what? We talk about Colorado and they lean into their strengths, and Carolina has done that forever, right? They have a forward group of disruptors, really strong defensive teams, the identity that no one can match to, the system. You don't need perfect goaltending. The blue line is stout as ever. But I like that the deadline, they brought in two players that kind of go up against everything they already have. Kuznetsov's a totally different player from anyone on the Carolina Hurricanes. They have extra center depth, which is always great to have. You want to have more forward versatility. They have the defense to balance out his game. And then you bring in Gensel. The one thing we have all been clamoring for the Canes to get for years, a finisher, an all-star finisher. And he's so much more than that. You know, he's such a skilled player, and I think sometimes we forget how good he is because he's had the support of Sidney Crosby, who's only taken him up a notch. But he's really good at creating space for himself and getting pucks back. And then, of course, getting to a prime scoring area and finishing his chances. So to me, it's like the Canes just got this infusion of up-tempo offense to complement everything else they have, their forecheck, their defense, you know, and they're just so much more complete than they were before. They're absolutely a team to beat, and it feels like they could go further than years past, finally.
Yeah, it is fascinating. I do wonder your thoughts on this one. We'll close. Are they better than the Rangers right now in that division?
It's a tough question because I think they're a more complete team than the Rangers. And the Rangers now, we're going to have that big question of Ryan Lindgren's injury and then what happens when Trevor returns and how someone like Zach Jones fits into the mix. You know, it's all going to be interesting there. But the Rangers, for me, over the last month or two, you see their defense getting worse and the goaltending getting better. And that it's not the most sustainable strategy, but it feels like it fits for them. But to me, the Canes are a little bit more complete.
Don't disagree. Although, man, when the Rangers are on, they're so much fun to watch and so dynamic and have so many different types of players and have a really, really well-constructed third line, the top six, and that scoring and offense is well told. And if Shesterkin can continue this run of great play, Jonathan Quick too, they're going to be a tough out too. All right, Shana, you're a great analyst and, as we found out, a great host as well. Thanks for the pin. You never had that, and so I bet you never imagined that when you woke up this morning. Yeah, I'm going to host for a couple of minutes today on radio and television. But thank you so much. As my equipment fails me, you did not. Thanks as always, Shana Goldman. You're the best.
Thanks for having me.
The great Shana Goldman from The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast. I think we're good. I think all the equipment's working. We got all the bugs out and we're cool. Standing by for Claude Julien, former NHL head coach. We will talk to Claude here in a couple of moments about a couple of different things. And from a coaching point of view, I would like to talk about the Nashville Predators and Andrew Brunette, stealth candidate for the Jack Adams. I'm just saying. One other thing that I wanted to mention earlier on and didn't get a chance is the official retirement of Wayne Simmonds. So he signs the one-day contract with the Philadelphia Flyers. He retires in orange, a team that he loved to play for, and man, did they ever love him. And again, like, this is one of those stories of perseverance and hard work and earning your ice. You know, Wayne Simmonds went through two OHL drafts. Okay, two OHL drafts, he was not selected until Mike Fuda, then general manager of the Owen Sound Attack, drafted him in, I want to say, the fifth or sixth round of the OHL draft. Then later went on to draft him, be part of the group that drafted him with the Los Angeles Kings as well. So Fuda drafts him and gives him a chance in Owen Sound. And he's turned every opportunity that he's had into success. We talk about standing in front of the net and what that means for your health. Spoiler, not good. But not just standing in front of the net to cause chaos, but having the ability to get your stick on pucks as well. And when Wayne Simmonds played in the NHL, specifically when he was in his prime, there were few, if any, who were better tipping pucks in front of the net. Joe Pavelski comes to mind as well. Full respect there. But Simmonds was a beast in front of the net and was tough and was rough and could play the game any way you liked. He looked, felt like a Philadelphia Flyer. Congratulations to Wayne Simmonds on a very wonderful career. He retires today officially, signing the one-day contract with the Philadelphia Flyers. Okay, so my next guest, former NHL coach, Stanley Cup champion, will coach again in the NHL one day. He is Claude Julien. He joins me now. Claude, how are you today?
I'm very good. Thank you, Jeff.
Just talking about Wayne Simmonds there a couple of seconds ago. Today he officially calls it a career. You would have coached plenty against Wayne Simmonds over the years. When I say that name, Claude, what comes to mind for you?
Well, I think a lot of it was, as you mentioned earlier, he was so good around the net area, but he was also a tough but honest hockey player. And, you know, he's one of the guys, I'll be honest with you, when I was in Montreal, we actually looked at him as far as trying to get him to sign with us when he eventually signed with the Leafs. So he was a guy that was well-respected around the league. I think a lot of teams needed a guy like Wayne Simmonds because, like I said, he brought some toughness. He was unbelievable on the power play around the net area. And you mentioned others. You know, Ryan Smith was one of those guys that was so good around the net area. Yep. And those guys are hard to find. And not just because they can tip pucks in, but also the will to want to stand in front. And he was one of those guys that not every defenseman enjoyed pushing him out of the way because they knew what they had to face eventually. But, you know, he's had a great career. And, you know, he's been a great player. And, you know, happy for him that he's at peace with the fact that he's had a great career and is willing to hang him up. And good for the Flyers also to give him a one-day contract there. It's a great way to end his career.
Absolutely. You know, I can see him working in player development, you know, somewhere with some NHL team whenever Wayne Simmonds wants. You know, you said something there, Claude, that has always intrigued me about, you know, coaches, managers, people that make decisions on rosters. When you were either with Montreal, when you're with Boston, like, were there some players, and it's always, you know, safer to talk about players, obviously, that are out of the league now, like Wayne Simmonds, for example. Were there players that you really wanted, like really pushed hard for your team, and maybe it came close and maybe it didn't, but were there any that came to mind that, you know, you looked around the NHL and you said, this guy would look so good with us on the Bruins, or this guy would look so good with us on the Montreal Canadiens? You mentioned Wayne Simmonds a second ago. Any other players like that come to mind from your past?
Well, that's a good question. Now, as you're asking that question, you kind of stumped me there because I'm trying to think of a name, and I know there's tons of them along the way, whenever, especially during trade deadline, you know, you'd say, and it depended on the year because it depended on what you wanted. And sometimes you were looking for a puck-moving defenseman. Sometimes you were looking for a defenseman that could bring a little bit of toughness back there that would make other fours on other teams uncomfortable. Other times it was, you know, even it didn't have to be a top-notch player. Sometimes it was to give you some depth on your squad. And there's been a lot of times, and we go back to Wayne Simmonds, you know, you've got a guy that can produce, but you've also got a guy that's pretty respected and tough that can handle himself. And you like that from your team, to have players like that you know if the going gets tough. Yeah. They're going to be there for you, and those are hard guys to get through to. But at the end of the day, I think every team is always looking for certain guys. And, you know, you look at the Bruins right now, what they've done with their team, and people are saying, how come they're still competitive, you know, after losing all these guys, the Sheras, the, you know, Krejci, Bergerons, and all these guys. And what they end up doing, they end up finding guys that come in and just fit, I guess, into the style of play that they want. And that's the important part. It's not always about getting the best player, but the player that's going to fit in to the mold of the group and then, you know, continue to give your team some success. And, you know, they've been fortunate. You know, they had Taylor Hall that went in there, and I thought Taylor Hall really actually papered his game to the Bruins style and ended up having a great season. You know, and those are the kind of things that you look for when you're grabbing a player, or when coaches are talking to GM, say, I wouldn't mind having him because you feel he's going to be a good fit to the hockey club.
Makes a lot of sense. You know, you mentioned Zdeno Chara's name there a second ago, and, you know, his name popped up a couple of different times around Matt Rempe of the New York Rangers. You know, 6'8", he's young, he's a rookie. Some of the hits have been very borderline or already stepped over the border with either the Nathan Bastian hit or the Jonas Siegenthaler hit. And one of the points that I've always made about Zdeno Chara, kind of tongue-in-cheek, but not really, is, you know, Claude, I always thought that Zdeno Chara should win the Lady Byng Trophy every year, not for how he played, but for how he chose not to really hurt players, because he could have, as you know, you coach him, he could have, like, laid waste to the NHL, but he didn't. And I always thought that he was a really effective body checker who never, and I know Montreal Canadiens fans are going to throw Max Pacioretty at me, I hear you, but never really stepped over the line. Like, how did you talk to Chara about physicality and contact? How did you have that conversation?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, Jeff, I never had to have that conversation with him because he was already good at it. And you're absolutely right. They're the guy who is so strong. And every year, you know, in training camp, he would just destroy everybody in the fitness, you know, category. He was such a fit athlete. It was unbelievable. But he also kind of knew, you know, his strength and how to manage it. And he played the right way, and never would he have tried to injure a player. And, I mean, I was with Boston. I was also with Montreal. And I can also tell you, in all honesty, that he never meant to injure Max Pacioretty, no matter what Montreal people are telling you. I think, you know, when you look at it, it was just an unlucky hit where he hit the stanchion. But that's Zdeno, and it bothered him that Max Pacioretty was injured. It bothered him because he's the type of player that didn't want to injure play. He wanted to do it the right way. I remember him in a few of the fights that he had. Once he had the guy in a vulnerable position, he would stop. And he'd let the referees come in and separate him. So, you know, when you talk about that Matt Remke, he's one of those young players that is trying to learn his trade. And he knows what's expected of him. And like any young player, you know, you learn as you go along, and he's going to tell you down the road that when he's been in the league for 5, 6, or more years that he made some mistakes along the way. But you got to understand the pressure that's on this young player. And then you guys remember when they played the Leafs, there was, you know, Ryan Reeves, you know, waiting to see if this young guy was going to come after him and what was going to happen. And, you know, I can just imagine him the night before trying to get to sleep and knowing that this is what's expected of him, and that's what all the fans are expecting to see. So there is a lot of pressure on those guys, and you feel for them. And then you've heard a lot of former, you know, tough guys talk about how difficult it was for them to get ready every game, knowing that they had to do something that they knew they had to do to stay in the league, but didn't really enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm. Has fear left the game? Cloaks, it's an interesting point that you raise about guys. I remember talking to Brad May about this, and Brad would always talk about, you know, the night before, you know, they played Minnesota once, and he knew that he was gonna have to fight Derek Bugard. Like, he did not sleep the night before. You know, a lot of players, you know, before they had to fight Bugard, the late great Derek Bugard, you know, who wouldn't have a good night's sleep at all. And it leads into the conversation about fear and intimidation, and that comes in a lot of different forms. Like, some teams, as you know, will intimidate with their power play. Other teams will intimidate physically. Is there an element of fear in hockey or intimidation in hockey that has been lost, given that, you know, things like fighting is, you know, despite the fact that Matt Repke's trying to bring it back single-handedly, is kind of gone now?
Yeah, I think it is. The physicality part of it, that fear, there's less and less of those players. And even the players that are still in the game that can do it are not there just to do it. Their teams are expecting them to go out there and finish their checks and that, but they're not saying you need to fight every game or every second game. And, you know, you're going to end up dropping the gloves when the time is right and the situation asks for it. And I think because of that, and because of the new rules and everything that's been put in, it's kind of, I guess, slowed down or is less than it used to be. I think that fear is gone. Yep. But what you mentioned about the fear of power plays, you know, I remember every time we'd pre-scout a team, we'd say, okay, tonight, guys, you got to stay out of the box. This power play is a top five in the league, and they'll make us pay for it. Or, you know, this team is very physical. We got to be ready for the physicality. They're going to finish all their checks. Let's make sure our heads are in it. So you prepare for those kind of, those kind of fears for your team. But I don't think there's much going on anymore saying, hey, guys, be careful with this guy. He's tough as nails. And if you get in a fight against this guy, that's kind of gone away from the game, I think, quite a bit personally. But it doesn't mean they're not there anymore. They just play a different role where there's more than – you remember the times where they were there and the only time they went on the ice, they'd have three, maybe four shifts a game, and it was to instigate something. But those days are gone.
They are. I want to ask you about a couple of people specifically, and they're both in Nashville. I want to ask you about head coach Andrew Brunette and what he's been able to do with this Nashville team. And I know we're going to always talk a lot about, you know, after they lose to Dallas 9-2, he cancels a team trip to Vegas to go see U2. And, you know, the team turned it around from there. They realized sort of what they were there for, and you're not going to get vacations in season or little one-day vacations unless you perform on the ice. But I really want to ask you about Barry Trotz. And, like, Claude, you're a very thoughtful hockey person. You understand the game, obviously. You understand the players, and you understand the dynamic. And here's Barry Trotz, very successful head coach, obviously, Stanley Cup champion like yourself, who's made the decision to kick himself upstairs and work as a general manager with the Nashville Predators. Did that ever interest you, working at the general manager level, or did you always kind of want to be that much closer to the game, be, you know, right there, a bench and a couple of feet away from the ice?
Well, you know, I certainly wouldn't say no to the upper management part, but I'm still a guy that really likes to be close to the players. And I think, you know, when you talk about Barry Trotz, and I had the opportunity to work with Barry there with Team Canada there at the World Cup, in 2016, and you know, we've been good friends for quite a while, obviously the coaching fraternity and all that stuff. But you know, I think what was really good about what happened with Nashville that you mentioned is that, first of all, he's been behind the bench before. He knows how the players think. The players know how he thinks. He's also a guy that's well respected by all the players he's had, and I think his message, you know, the way it was probably said to the players, although it came out pretty harsh, you know, in the media, as far as they're not going to Vegas the day before, or they're not getting that one-day vacation. I'm sure that the way Barry went in there and explained it to the guys made a lot of sense to them, and they were able to react to that. And I think that's what you need sometimes, you know, with GMs in today's game, as we always talk about, you know, the evolution of players over the years changes all the time, and players today seem to need to know the why and, you know, of the situation. And once it's explained to them properly, they react to it a lot better. But if you just kind of back in the old days, they would have told you, you're not going on this trip, and that's it, you know. And it was like one of those things, you figure it out why. It's changed, you know, but Barry has a good feel. And I think a lot of GMs in this league that are successful also have that. There's a lot of former GMs. You know, Steve Yzerman is one of them that comes to mind. And there's tons of them. You know, Steve Staios now is a former player, you know. And so these guys understand, you know, the evolution of the players. So they seem to be able to handle those situations well.
One other coaching, I mean, this was, it's classic John Tortorella. What did you think when you saw John Tortorella and Wes McCauley, having their back and forth last week, where McCauley was telling him, you're out of the game. And John was saying and pointing at him with that cast on his hand, I'm not leaving. What did you think when you saw that from Torts, Claude?
Well, you know, obviously we're not surprised. Torts is Torts, and I can tell you, Jeff, that, you know, I was taught, the only game I was tossed out from an NHL bench was with Wes McCauley as well, and he tossed me out. It was I think in the third period there, near the end of a game. So I actually just left the bench with Torts. I think that's what really probably caused the two-game suspension that was added to it. I know he's had a bit of a history, but the fact that he wouldn't leave the bench is probably what was added to the fine, is that two-game suspension. And as you know, the league is very imminent about coaches not embarrassing referees. And, you know, as you probably will know, you'll get that discussion going, how about referees embarrassing coaches, you know? But, you know, the league is always going to protect their referees, and that's what they did in this case. You know, he wouldn't leave the bench, and it wasn't great for the game. It wasn't great for the league itself, and they chose to do that. But, you know, Torts is his own man, and he always has been. Anybody who knows Torts personally knows how great of a person he is. But he does have that personality behind the bench. And when it comes to hockey and decisions, he can be tough.
You know, one of the things, and, you know, the John Tortorella situation, speaking with Claude Julien, one of the John Tortorella situation sort of, you know, added another log onto this fire. The idea of, and I understand they might not want to do it after every single game, but during games like we saw, well, with the Philadelphia Flyers where John Tortorella got punted, or if there's a controversial call, something that sort of merits a further explanation, would you be in favor of the officials having to make themselves available for post-game questioning? Again, not doesn't have to be every game, but when there's something that needs further explanation to the public, because still to this day, we don't know, you know, what was said, what was the issue. You know, we think it may have been Wes McCauley trying to protect a junior official and standing in between him and John Tortorella, but we don't know. Would you be in favor of officials, I guess for lack of a better term, being accountable after games like that and making themselves available to microphones?
Well, you know, that's a great question because I think it's a double-edged sword. I think, you know, in some cases it would clarify a lot of things. In some other cases, probably the explanation would create an even bigger argument, you know. So does it get resolved by the referee, you know, explaining what his thoughts were? Because, as you know, no matter what an opinion or a thought is, you're going to have some people that are going to be for it, and there's going to be people that are going to be against it. So, you know, I don't know if the referees or the league itself are seeing it as a no-win situation. But at the same time, I do understand the fact that, you know, media would probably have a better outlook or would probably write something better if they knew exactly what had happened or what had been said. So, you know, like I said, it's a double-edged sword. I don't disagree with either side, although that, you know, there could be a situation where it makes the situation worse and it makes it better. So that's where I think the NHL is standing right now on that question.
Always great stuff, Claude. I always appreciate it when you come on. Always insightful. Always learn something as well. Thanks so much for sharing your expertise and your thoughts on the game right now. Look forward to catching up again soon.
Sounds good, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Claude Julien from the comes on this program on a semi-regular basis, former head coach in the NHL and someone that should be probably on the benches now somewhere around the NHL. You know, I do wonder, you know, as the Ottawa Senators specifically will be looking to add someone to their bench in the head coaching capacity, I wonder if Claude Julien could be a fit there. We shall see. Claude Julien did mention, you know, former player Steve Staios, now running the Ottawa Senators. I wonder if there could be something there. I know that the common and prevailing wisdom is Ottawa may be looking to the Maple Leafs organization, the American Hockey League with John Gruden. You know, both Michael Ann Lauer and Steve Staios with Hamilton had Gruden as their head coach there, won an OHL championship, went to the Memorial Cup in Regina, etc. I do wonder, though, if Claude Julien does get some consideration there, and probably, if not in Ottawa, should probably get some consideration somewhere this offseason. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook, Bet Local. Today, you know, only two games on the go around the NHL this evening. We're going to focus on one that you can watch on Rogers Monday Night Hockey, and that is the Washington Capitals and the Calgary Flames. Here's the deets. Flames minus 1.5. Washington are 7-2 straight up in their last 9 games against Calgary. Washington are 3-9 straight up in their last 12 against an opponent in the Western Conference. The total has gone under in 4 of Washington's last 5 games. The total has gone over in 8 of Calgary's last 10 games. Calgary 8-4 straight up in their last 12. The total has gone over in 4 of Calgary's last 5 games when playing at home against Washington. As I was saying to Shannon Goldman at the beginning of the program here, it seems as if when you look at that last wild card spot in the Eastern Conference, the only team that really wants to do something right now about it is the Washington Capitals. And they've only played 66 games. The Detroit Red Wings have played 68. This is the game in hand, and this is a game where the Washington Capitals can leapfrog the Detroit Red Wings and jump into that, I can't believe I'm saying this, wild card spot in the East. That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook, Bet Local. Joining me in hour two, Doug Armstrong, GM of Team Canada and the St. Louis Blues, but next from Florida at the GM's meetings, Elliot Friedman. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Going to head right to our next guest. He is the general manager of Team Canada through the next Olympic cycle. He is also the general manager of the St. Louis Can They Get Their Blues, a scant 4 points away from a wild card spot in the Western Conference. Doug Armstrong joins me now. Doug, thanks so much for doing this, taking time away from your affairs in Florida right now at the GM's meetings. Thanks for doing this. How are you today?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me on.
The pleasure is mine. First of all, how did things go this morning? I understand that I think golf is on the agenda for the managers this afternoon. How did things go at the GM's meeting this morning?
They're very good. The way that Colin Campbell sets it up, it's about an hour overview of where we're at and what we're going to be doing over the next few days. Then we break out into smaller subcommittees, and each group is given some issues to talk about, and we talk about those in a smaller group, then we'll take them back to the bigger group tomorrow and have really good debate and discussion on what we can do to improve the game. Everyone, I think, is in the belief right now, Jeff, that the game's in a great spot, but you always want to keep your finger on the pulse to see if there's any way you can improve it.
One more question about the GMs, and then I want to move on to your Blues and Team Canada as well. It doesn't seem, and maybe I'm just oblivious to it, as if there is one, you know, major hot button need to address, need to massage, need to fix issue this time around. Am I on base or off base with that one this year?
I'd say you're on base with that one. You just come in and the games are unbelievably exciting. The pace of play is good. Scoring is good. Physical play is good. The game's in a great spot. And, you know, certainly credit the players for that. They're high intensity with a high level of skill.
And your team playing really well too. I want to get to Team Canada in a second, but spent a good part of today's show talking about and wondering if the St. Louis Blues can pull this off. 4 points out, four-game winning streak. Pavel Buchnevich has looked excellent, tremendous last night against the Anaheim Ducks. Robert Thomas with a pair of goals. The Jordan Binnington story is very well told, and I'm sure as the GM of Team Canada, you're interested not only as his GM in the NHL, but also for the national team. What are your thoughts on your NHL team right now? I know it's Vegas is a team that everyone's gunning for right now, and all of a sudden your St. Louis Blues are making a lot of noise around Vegas.
Yeah, well, we put ourselves in a position right now where we don't control our own destiny. So we're going to have to win games and hope that Vegas or whoever you're chasing loses more. We do play some of these teams at least in front of us one or two more times, and that's all you can do is win games in hand. You wish you were getting chased, but right now we're chasing. I think the positive for the Blues right now is that we only have to overcome one team. It's not like we're in a spot where we are 5 points back with four teams in between us. So we see the groups that we have to catch, and we have to go about it and just hope that we play good hockey and we don't run out of time.
You know, there's and I'm guilty of this too, because I'm part of the media that helps with this reporting. But I find that there are two really underreported stories in the NHL this season. One is the Dougie Hamilton injury in New Jersey, and the other is just how well Jordan Binnington has played with the St. Louis Blues. Do you have a thought on your goaltender, which I kind of have to admit we don't talk enough about?
Well, I think that Binner was good last year too. We just, our team wasn't playing well in front of him, and you know, if you have two shots and you save one, it's a 500 save percentage. So if you make a great save and the rebound's just lying there and the guy taps it in, so it doesn't look good. And I thought Binner was the victim last year of a team that gave up too many backdoor plays, too many easy second opportunities, and we've played better in front of him, and he's done a really good job. Now, saying that, he's played better, a little bit better this year than last year. But he's been a good goalie for us for a long time. And there's such great confidence our team has right now in Binnington and Hofer that they give us a chance to win every night. And we talk about that internally that, you know, in one of the most important positions on the ice, we feel we walk in at worst equal and in a lot of nights with an advantage. And we have to start taking advantage of that. And the guys are. So I'm happy for Binner that he is getting some accolades right now, but I also understand that if you're getting the accolades and you're a top team in the league, they come easier than for a team fighting where we are. But that doesn't change the fact of what a great year he's having.
I do want to ask you about Pavel Buchnevich. The most versatile forward you have can play any position up front, can play center, can play wing, take your pick, either side. And he's been tremendous lately. And he was one of those players around deadline that I think we all wondered about. Was it ever close? Did you ever have to really think about an offer, or was it always going to be, you know what, no one's hitting the price that we like right now. He's a St. Louis Blue.
Yeah, I don't really want to get into what happened at the deadline because, you know, year in, year out, names are bandied around that I learn about them through the media that they're available. So, you know, and they're on my own team. So I don't put a lot of stock into it. But back to Booch, he's been a very good player since he's been to St. Louis. He was a good player before, maybe playing under a little younger at that time and playing under different guys. Here he's been a main player for us, a player in our top six and almost always in our top three. And you're right. He does touch every aspect of our game. He penalty kill, power play, five on six, six on five, and versatile. He's played all three, four positions to get balance in our lineup. The coach, Drew Bannister, has decided to put him at center ice, moving Shen up to left wing. And now we have balanced lines. And, but in the third period of a must-win game yesterday against Anaheim, he moved that line back together with Robert Thomas and Kai Russo. Our guys got to be quick on the bench because the coach does move them around, but it's also nice to have that versatility and the trust that you're not hoping it's going to work, knowing that he's such a complete player that he's going to make whoever he plays with better.
Who in your estimation on your Blues team has taken the biggest steps? Like, I know that Buchnevich has, you know, sucked up a lot of the oxygen around the conversation. He's had just an exceptional season for you. And Robert Thomas, you know, 23 goals so far this season, a pair last night against Anaheim. But who do you think has taken the biggest steps in their career on your team this year?
Well, I would say the one to be Jake Neighbors, just because he's developing his career now and developing what he's going to become. And, you know, he's a 20-plus goal scorer now, a fixture on our first power play unit, a fixture on front of the net. So he's someone that's maturing his game into what he's going to be for the next decade. And then we have other players that are having, you know, whether you want to call them bounce-back seasons, but are getting back to the level that we know they play at. Colton Parenko is having a good year. Those players that you talked about earlier are playing good. I think, you know, under the radar screen, a player like Torpachenko, he's a Swiss Army knife for a coach, plays up the lineup, down the lineup, and never changes his style of play. He's a north-south player, plays with speed, arrives with ill will, you know, and he's showing some hands this year, too, that can take advantage of his skating by getting past D and driving hard to the net and finishing play. So we've had some growth with some of our younger players, and that's really one of the things we want to win every night. And as we're winning, we want to see players grow. And so you see Scott Perunovic, who's staying healthy and having a good year, Jake Neighbors, Torpachenko, and then we have a player, Bolduc, that's coming up. So we're trying to be competitive. We're trying to fight for playoff spots and have some growth. And we're fortunate we see some good growth from some of our younger players.
Let me ask you about Team Canada. And I know you'll get asked the goaltending question a lot from here on in. I was told that your answer today was, well, look at the recent Stanley Cup champions outside of Andre Vasilevsky, and they all feature a Canadian goaltender. Does that position concern you at all?
I don't think it concerns me just because of that. Canadian goaltenders seem to, when the lights are the brightest in the Stanley Cup playoffs, have risen up and grabbed that. And I think it's different in Canada because we don't have the alpha male maybe that we've had for a long time, whether it was Brodeur or Patrick Waugh or Price or Luongo. You know, you just go. I think you get spoiled having one guy that's going to run it for a generation. I think really if you take Vasilevsky out of the equation, which is you can't do that, but there's been a fluctuation on a good goalie to bad goalie. The goalies don't seem to go on 5, 6, 7 or decade long runs like Patrick did or like Marty did or Eddie Belfour. Yep. They just seem to fluctuate where 1 year it's a guy having a great year, then the next year. And I truly believe this. It's not that the top goalies are being good and bad. I think the floor is so close to the ceiling in that position that there's usually not a great difference between goalies. And that's why I think you see some guys that have years where it's posting out and it's posting in, and it's a bad year posting out, it's a good year. And I just think I think that's how tight it is right now in that position.
You know, one of the things that I do wonder about, and maybe this doesn't exist at the NHL level. I mean, it's the top league, it's the top players, it's the top everything. But at a lot of lower levels, when teams come in and they knew, you know, that the manager or the coach, I'll just focus in on junior hockey, for example. If you know that, you know, Mark Hunter is going to be the GM of the national team, for example, or Dale Hunter is going to be the coach, and you're going into London, there might be a tendency to try to, you know, put on a show, try to get the attention of that manager or that coach. Do you think that's going to be a thing now when teams come to play against St. Louis? Like, I know you watch all the games, but it's against your team. Do you find that players will want to maybe go out of their way to try to get your attention, try to impress you, or is that even a thing at the NHL level?
That's a great question. And I would say just because of modern technology, I think the players are aware they're being scouted every night. It's live or the next day, my job is to watch player shifts on the computer the next day. So I think the guys are aware of it. What really stood out to me, I think, was, you know, going into 2014, the Olympics there, I was fortunate David Backus was our captain. And like about January 5th or 6th, he just started to fight every Canadian player that was on the other team. And so he was like on his mind, he wasn't trying to impress anybody. He was just marking his turf. And I think that players aren't going to be trying to impress the manager or the coach. I think what they're going to be trying to do is to draw that line in the sand against their competition and just to put a focal point on it. And I tell you, I was a part of that management group working for Steve, and I noticed David doing that, and I had to chuckle. We never talked about it, but
okay,
you know, you could tell that this wasn't an accident, that tonight we were playing a player that might be on Team Canada, and there was a scrap brewing. So, but as far as players ramping it up just because someone's in the building, I think they're all fully aware now that they're being watched, quite honestly, all the time, and they're putting their best foot forward regardless.
You know, we had David Backus on the podcast a few years ago, and that's one of the questions that I asked him, and I believe it was Jonathan Toews that he fought. I think it might have been Corey Perry as well. And there was one other player, but it was very obvious, like what he was doing. And he copped to it. He's like, oh yeah, this is exactly what I was doing. Last question for you, Doug. I know it's a busy day in Florida at the general managers meetings. I'm always curious about, and I think we all are, about the nature of roster construction. And, you know, Canada kind of had a sea change a number of years ago where instead of constructing a roster based on what the first line, second line, third line, fourth line, first pair, second pair, third pair does, the philosophy shifted to the motto of skill adapts. When you look at the job in front of you right now, is it constructing a roster as if it's an NHL team, or is it the skill adapts motto?
I'd say it's a hybrid, probably slanted more 75 to 25 to where skill adapts. I think one of the things that you look back on the Canadian rosters for a number of years, number of events, is the number of centermen that are put on those teams that play on the wing.
Yes.
You know, it's obviously easier to go as a centerman to play on the wing than the wing and the center. But ultimately, you want to, you know, and working with Steve, you know, he sets great attention to detail. Okay, well, right shot, left shot, face-offs. What are we going to do here? Who's going to do this job? And you don't bring players for a specific job because you might never be put in that situation. And great players do adapt. I think some of the things you look for is synergy. But you don't want to overplay that card either. You know, well, if we take this player, he's going to make that player better. And I learned that by just observing is that you think two guys play well together in the NHL, but if you put a better player than with the really good player, he's going to play better too. So I think what you have to really be careful of is overanalyzing things. You know, the players really show you where they're at. And I remember Drew Doughty making the 2010 team, and we took him to the World the year before as a very young player. And, you know, we weren't sure if he should go to that. Was he too young? He went there and played very good, and then less than 6 months later, he's on the Olympic team. So you never cross anybody off until the last second because you never know how it's going to go. But to answer your question, I think that we'll certainly always – a defer to skill more than just a specific need.
Makes a lot of sense. I know it's a busy day for you. Thanks for parking a lot of time with me. You're always generous with your time. Today, no difference. Doug Armstrong, thanks so much for stopping by the show today. Much appreciated. Best of luck the rest of the way this season with the St. Louis Blues, and have some fun in Florida.
Thank you. Always enjoy being on. You take care.
There he is. Doug Armstrong is the general manager of the St. Louis Blues, general manager of the Canadian national team as well, through the Olympic cycle and the Four Nations face-off as well. Want to make mention quickly, I want to park more time. We just didn't have it today. UNB Reds and Concordia Stingers, national champions on the men's and women's side. Congratulations to Julie Chu, the head coach of the Concordia Stingers. I know last year was a tough one for them. They're back to their winning program. Next year, the tournament is in Waterloo. Well, I don't think anyone should be surprised to see Concordia back in it again. And as far as UNB goes, that team was insane, just to be blunt. Perfect season, not a single loss in the three-game tournament at the end. They didn't concede a single goal, 15-0. It is the 10th title in UNB history, the ninth for Gardner McDougall. He also has a Memorial Cup, don't forget, in St. John as well. Somewhere down the road, and maybe the time is right now, you need to start talking about Gardner McDougall and the Hall of Fame and whether there's a position for him in the hockey, again, not the NHL, the Hockey Hall of Fame. And this is, in a lot of ways, like you look at the roster, it is all players from the CHL as well. This is a victory lap for the CHL education package. Thanks to all of my guests for stopping by today, our entire crew as well, and to Shayna Goldman for hosting when my tie line went down. She's a guest. She's a host. She does it all. She'll take all of her jobs. Back tomorrow on The Merrick Show.